how high school sports have been affected by the weather, and games that were scheduled for today have been postponed or in some cases canceled altogether.
Yeah, all the games that were scheduled for today have at least been postponed. We do have some dates that we can tell you about. We'd already known that the Beloit Sacred Heart games for tonight have been moved to Thursday night, and then also St. John's Tipton at Pike Valley games that were scheduled tonight have been moved to Thursday in Cortland. Osborne at Sylvan Lucas was scheduled to be here on Katy Country 94 tonight. That's been postponed to Saturday. So those games will start. Actually, have the JV girls at 1 o'clock. Two quarters in each of the girls and boys JV games. And then the girls varsity will begin approximately 3 o'clock in Sylvan Grove. And then also Lakeside at Wilson games for tonight have been officially canceled. So those are the notes that we know as far as the immediate area teams are concerned. We will continue to update all we can at nckssports.com on your local schedules, and all the latest local news can be found there on the website at nckssports.com. So no basketball in the area tonight.
No basketball tonight. We'll have more games for you, weather cooperating and everything else. On Thursday, it'll end up being a doubleheader that wasn't originally scheduled. Lincoln at Lakeside on Katy Country 94, and it'll be Sacred Heart at Beloit on Z96.3 at Lake. Friday, St. John's Tipton at Sylvan Lucas on Katy Country 94, Beloit at Minneapolis on Z96.3 at Lake. And we will have sub-state wrestling reports for you beginning, they start at noon, so probably 12:30, our first report coming up on Saturday from Minneapolis. Let's wrap up one thing with basketball, and then we'll focus on wrestling because we have wrestling locker room chats today as well. I saw, and I talked about it during the broadcast, I saw one of the worst, and I hate to say this because I know officiating isn't easy. I get it. I know officiating isn't easy. Having said that, the officials that were at this Beloit-Concordia game on Saturday, games I did on the radio when Beloit went to Concordia, and let me preface this by saying it didn't have any impact on the game at the end. It could have, but it didn't. But right before halftime, the Beloit Concordia boys are playing, and one of the officials I've known for many years, and he's a veteran official, so I couldn't believe that they missed this call. It was unbelievable. And I think I was just as astounded by the fact that nobody from the Beloit bench argued it. I was absolutely stunned. I'm like, is there something I'm missing here? And all the investigation that I've looked into this missed call, talking to various people since then, and there's nothing to say that I can protect the officials on this one, because I can't. Mm-hmm. So anyway, right before halftime, well, first of all, let me ask Dusty, because I'm pretty sure he knows the rule. If there's 0.3 seconds or less on the clock, what's the rule?
You can't catch the ball and shoot the ball.
Huh. You could be an official, because you know that rule better than the officials at the game the other day. I was stunned and flabbergasted by the missed call, and the officials didn't even discuss it. They might have said something, but they didn't huddle and get together. I was stunned by it. There was 0.2 seconds left. 0.2 seconds left before halftime. And Concordia's throwing the ball inbounds from the near sideline, going back to my left. Okay, so Beloit's defending. Beloit made a defensive substitution. There's a little bit of confusion. And then the Beloit's defense, I grant you, it was really, really poor, because two players stayed at the top of the key. At the foul line, and this kid didn't even get a back screen. He just flat out darted to the hoop. And Concordia threw a perfect pass from the sideline. The kid, here's the key, listen very carefully, caught the ball in midair on the baseline and shot it and swished it. What's the rule again, Dusty, with 0.3 seconds or less?
You can't catch and shoot.
Can't catch or shoot. So he caught and he shot and he made it. And the official on the far side, I went back to the video stream archive to watch the video. The official on the far side immediately counted it, which he apparently wasn't paying attention to the clock at all. Mm-hmm. And then the official underneath, I think, seemed to be like, didn't know really for sure what was going on. And the other official, who's is a veteran official. I mean, he's been reffing games for decades. He didn't overrule it. The basket counted. 0.2 seconds. I did not know you could catch and shoot and score. But apparently, with that officiating crew, it's okay. And I don't want to be overly critical, because I know officials. I know officials are not perfect. I know officials make mistakes. And honestly, that officiating crew, I thought, did a decent job all day long. You always know officials did a pretty good job if you're not talking about them. Mm-hmm. That's a compliment if you're not talking about them. Because when you're talking about them, that means they missed the call. Well, I'm talking about them because they missed something. And this is, and here's the thing I'll defend myself on, in case people are out there, officials, and saying, wow, you know, Wade, well, if you think you can do a better job, you'd be an official. Here's the difference, though. Todd Tishner is a Major League Baseball umpire. We've had him on our show multiple times. He is the best at his craft. In fact, he was a World Series umpire this year. Mm-hmm. Okay? Todd Tishner is in his 40s, so he's not way young. He's not way old, depending on how you see old and young. And he's from Southwest Kansas. And he has a son that has played a lot of baseball, and he has been able to watch his son play baseball a few times. And he said the one thing that infuriates him, and now remember, this is a Major League Baseball umpire, at a baseball game watching his son, he said the thing that upsets him with umpires or officials, and he is one of them, he said, is not when guys miss a call. He goes, that's human. You miss a ball strike, that, you know, that happens. You call a guy safe at first, he's out, that happens. Okay? He said, what drives him insane is when officials and referees and umpires don't know the rules. When you don't know how to enforce a rule, that drives him nuts. That's from a Major League Baseball umpire.
Mm-hmm.
And that also drives me nuts as well. If you're an official, you do need to know the rules. I'll cut you a little bit of slack if you're a young ref or a first-time ref. You're starting to get in. I understand. You might be learning as you go. This officiating crew on Saturday, like I said, did, I think, a pretty good job, except for this one call before halftime. But the reason I'm sharing this story is I'm flabbergasted and flummoxed and can't believe it that shot counted. And I had people that were listening to the broadcast, people that were watching the video stream. I got 3 or 4 or 5 people, I think it was, that texted me immediately and said, do they not know the rule? I said, God, you'd hope they would. Mm-hmm. I said, and this crew isn't 3 kids that just came out of high school that are reffing for the first time. And there was no get together and discussing it. I went down then. I'm like, okay, well, maybe the officials went over the Concordia bench and the Beloit bench before that throw in and said, hey, you know what? We think there's more time on the clock. We don't want to, it's going to be hard to put it to like 8/10 of a second. So, you know, hey, Coach Holmes, Coach Eilert, they can catch and shoot, even though the clock says 2/10, you know, but that didn't happen. I've talked to the coaches for Beloit anyway.
Yeah.
And if they told Concordia that and didn't tell Beloit that, then there's another major problem with the officials, and I'm sure they didn't. So no team was said, hey, nobody was told by the officials, even though there's 2/10 of a second, there's actually a little bit more because we don't want to mess with the clock. I went down to the clock operator after the games, that the lady was still there. Bless her heart, you know, it's volunteer doing her job. And I said, did they come over and say anything about 2/10 of a second? There's more time on the clock, or there should have been more time on the clock. Did they say anything to you? And she said, no. She just looked at me and said, no. I said, okay. And then this guy dressed in Concordia garb says to me, he goes, it was a tip. I said, and here's what I wanted to say. You need your eyes checked just as much as the officials is what I wanted to say. But I bit my tongue and I said, well, I've got video evidence to tell you otherwise, sir. I said, trust me, it was a catch and a shot. You can't catch and shoot in 2/10 of a second. I said, that basket should not have counted. What do you think his comeback was? It didn't matter anyway.
Yeah.
Didn't matter anyway. Well, no kidding, dipstick. I get that part. The part is that rule was not enforced correctly. The officials either forgot the rule, didn't remember the rule, or sadly don't know the rule, and that would be amazing to me. And it did matter at the time. See, here's the thing. When people go back and they say, well, this call didn't matter. At the end of the day, it didn't matter. You know what? You're right. Concordia won by 24. That call did not matter at the end of the day. But at the time, it did. And you tell me, who's feeling better going in the locker room? Beloit giving up a alley-oop that shouldn't have counted for 2 points? Or Concordia, who scored the alley-oop for 2 points that shouldn't have counted? Who do you think feels better going in the locker room?
Obviously, Concordia.
Concordia. Yeah. Anytime you score a bucket at the buzzer, that gives you a little bit of a little hop in your step going in the locker room. Now, I don't personally think that would have caused any difference in the second half, okay? Mm-hmm. I want that to be full disclosure here. I do not believe that call cost anybody a game whatsoever. So then you may be asking yourself, you're listening to me right now, well, then why are you bringing up Wade? Why are you talking about it? Because I am absolutely stunned. And you don't even have to be a diehard basketball fan to know that rule. It is at every level of basketball. It is at every level of basketball. It is at the pro level. It is at the college level. It is at high school level. It's at the junior high level. You cannot catch and shoot with 3/10 of a second or less. It must be a tip-in. Now, I did learn something new, is that a head coach in our area sent me an image of it while I was broadcasting the game, showing the exact rule, which I already knew the rule. But there was a little exception. There is an exception. And it would only apply in a high school gym or lower. If you are at a gymnasium playing a basketball game and the scoreboard clock does not display tenths of a second, then that rule does not apply.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that makes sense because you would never know if it's 3/10, 8/10, yeah, whatever. That makes sense. Guess what? It did apply. It did apply Saturday because they did have tenths of a second on the clock. So I bring this story up because, one, you don't have to be a basketball geek or nerd or, you know, super, super intelligent to know that rule. It's very standard. It's a super, super, super standard rule. And I am absolutely still flat out today, even after that happened on Saturday, I cannot for the life of me understand how that was not even fully, like, get the three officials together and huddle and go, well, how much time was on the clock? 2/10. Well, it obviously doesn't count. How could they not see the guy caught the ball and shot it? If they can't see that, and they can't see there's 2/10 of a second on clock. I thought that was the point of having multiple officials, is you kind of have each other's back. Like, one of those three had to have known 2/10 of a second. Or did they? Did all three of them not realize there was 2/10 of a second on the clock? Or did they look up and think it was 2 seconds real fast instead of actually 2/10? And maybe that's what they thought. But it was one of the worst missed applications of a rule that almost everybody knows that was not applied. And it's still... it just absolutely flabbergasted me, especially considering one of the officials who has done a great job for all the years, he, along with these two others who I don't think they were newbies, but even if they were, it just blew me away. And I don't say it very often, this call was one of the worst calls I've seen, or this was one of the worst missed calls I've seen in quite some time at the high school level. Because to me, it was absolutely super easy.
Yeah.
2/10 of a second, and there was plenty of time because Beloit made a substitution, and there was plenty of time for the officials to know the clock situation, and for them not, I mean, the officials, we talk about clock management, right? Players, coaches need to know clock management. So do the officials. So if I have an official out there listening to me that sends me something and says, oh, Wade, you're being hard on them. No, I'm not. If you're a good official, you know the rule. I don't even think you have to be a good official to know the rule. I think you can be really any basketball official. I think you know the rule. I don't officiate. I call games all the time. I know the rule. I've known that rule for years. You know why? Every time there's 3/10 of a second and they talk about putting more time on the clock, well, this is the difference between a tip-in and catching and shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with my oldest son, who's 14. He says this all the time. Dad, there's no way you can catch and shoot in less than a second, let alone 3/10. I go, I agree with you. Totally agree with you. But it's a universal rule. It's been accepted that 4/10 of a second, you can catch and shoot. 3/10, you can't. Now, I think that's amazing how that slight difference can be the difference between catching and shooting and having to tip the ball in. But it is a very standard rule. It's not like this obscure rule that we didn't know about. Have you seen anybody miss this call like that? Have you had officials miss that?
Not in a game that I was calling, but as you were talking about it, and I can give you an idea of how far back this rule goes, right? Like, this isn't something new.
Right.
Because we knew it, and I was at, actually, it was the year after I'd graduated from Colby, and I went down to see my buddy. He lived in Great Bend, and so we went to the Colby Barton game, the men's game there that year, and our team was ranked number one at the time in the country, so we were all excited, you know. Colby was up by 2 against Barton with 1/10 of a second left. And they threw an inbound pass into the corner, and a kid for Barton catches and shoots a 3, and the official put his hands up like he was going to count it if it would have went in.
Mm-hmm.
With 1/10 of a second.
He was going to count it.
And he was going to count it. It didn't go in.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sitting here like, okay, immediately after that ball came in, he should have blew his whistle once the guy caught it and
right.
said the game's over, even if the buzzer didn't sound. Because obviously the buzzer's not going to sound. We're at Barton. They're going to help out their team, right? And so that's the only time I can think of that this kind of came into play in a game that I was at, where they honestly would have counted the shot had it went in, even with 1/10 of a second, a catch and shoot in a corner 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, there's no way that shot can count, and I'm glad he missed it because there would have been some pretty big controversy here. So I've never had it in a game that I've called on the radio, but I have seen it in person where it almost cost a team an actual game in that situation. And so, yeah, that was in 2005, I think. 2004, maybe. Yeah, 2004. So this is you know, a rule that's not new. It's not something that just came into play.
Right.
People should probably know.
The only excuse
that this
I can
is the case.
The only excuse I can come up with, and I think it's a weak one, is that all three of them looked up real quick and thought it was 2 seconds instead of 2/10.
Mm-hmm.
And that's amazing that all three could miss it at the same time. That's why you have more than one official. I'm part of it, so you can see more, obviously. So anyway, I was just astounded, especially considering who was officiating the game. And yes, I know it didn't impact the game. It didn't end up impacting the game at the end, but it did impact it at that time, no question. So it's easy for somebody that has their color glasses on to just blow it off and say, well, first of all, you got to get it right. You got to get your eyes checked. If you thought that was a tip, you weren't watching the game very carefully. If you think a catch and a shot is a tip, then I've got some oceanfront property to sell you right here back over by Beloit, Kansas, okay? So it is amazing to me where, one, you don't even know what you saw. Thank God that person isn't a ref. And secondly, you just blow it off. It's like, you know what? If that happened to your team, you wouldn't blow it off. So, you know, it is what it is. I just still astounded by it. Okay, regional wrestling took place on Saturday, and we've got a lot of our wrestlers moving on.
Yeah, we have 18 boys wrestlers moving on to the sub-state coming up this weekend in Minneapolis. It'll be this Saturday. So did have a couple regional champions. Trey Barrientes of Sylvan Lucas won the regional championship at 285 pounds. He's now 24-0 on the season for Sylvan Lucas. And again, in defense of his state championship from a year ago there at 285 and 321A. And also Brenna Walker, a Bullet, 182 pounds, was a regional champion there for the Trojans. He'll go into the sub-state round at 29-6 after winning the championship at the regional in Hillsboro on Friday. So those are your champions. Also, other qualifiers for sub-state from Beloit: Aiden Loomis, 113 pounds, Mason Fuller at 126, Tristan Thompson at 132, Tate Cadle at 160, Hunter Prohaska at 170, Braden Burks at 195, and Cameron Conkle at 220 for the Trojans, qualifying for the sub-state tournament. For Rock Hills, Coe Nielsen at 106 pounds, and Connor Cozan at 120 pounds. And then from Smith Center, qualifying for sub-state, Bentley Montgomery at 126, at 132, Jackson Pinckney, Alex Wilkinson at 138, Nathan Rabby at 160, Jake Kirkhoff at 182, Eli Franklin at 195, and Colton Harrisnape at 285 have all qualified for the sub-state tournament. Again, it comes up this Saturday in Minneapolis, beginning at noon. Again, we'll have reports on Kitty Country 94 beginning around 12:30 from Minneapolis 321A sub-state wrestling tournament. So also, we do want to pass along, there was Sierra Lanning from Smith Center on the girls' side, finished second place at the 321A Division II regional on Saturday at Trigo. And so she's moving on to the sub-state tournament, which will be this Friday in Ellis. So Sierra Lanning, 191 pounds for Smith Center girls team, is looking to make it to the state tournament as well. So congratulations to all those athletes. We'll talk about them all coming up on the locker room chats this evening. And we'll talk with the coaches of Beloit, Osborne, and Smith Center around 5:10 tonight on the high school wrestling locker room chats on Kitty Country 94 and kittycountry94.com.
All right. State will be next Saturday the 27th. So good luck to the wrestlers coming up on sub-state. There in Minneapolis coming up on Saturday. Once again, reports start around 12:30 on Saturday. We'll update you. Thanks to our sponsors making all that possible. All right, top 25 college basketball poll has been released. Gonzaga is still number one. Baylor, who's on a pause, still number two. Michigan, after a 23-day layoff, came back and won against a ranked team at Wisconsin, so they deserve number three. Number four is Ohio State. Five is Illinois, so the Big Ten has three, four, and five. Houston for the American Athletic Conference, along Wichita State. Houston's ranked sixth. Virginia's seventh, but they just lost last night to Florida State. Alabama's eighth. Oklahoma is ninth. Villanova's 10th. Iowa 11. Texas 12. West Virginia 13. Creighton 14. Texas Tech 15. Florida State 16. And continuing down, Tennessee, a team to beat KU, is 19th. Missouri is 20th. And KU is back in the rankings at 23 after beating Iowa State, who has no wins in the Big 12, two of the three wins, and they did beat a ranked Oklahoma State team at the beginning of last week. So KU back in the top 25. I think if Kansas was named, say, Rutgers,
because Rutgers, I just use that example. Rutgers is the second team outside the top 25. If Rutgers had the same week as Kansas had, Kansas would not have been in the top 25.
Mm-hmm.
I think the name helps. And I'm not saying that's a horrible thing. It doesn't really matter, per se, the rankings, because we decided on the floor with the NCAA tournament. At least last year we didn't. This year we will, it looks like, in Indianapolis. Oklahoma State just on the outside looking in as the 26th team. But Kansas is back in the polls after a one-week hiatus, and we'll see if they can stay there, because you look at Kansas' schedule. Of course, tomorrow night the Jayhawks will be at Manhattan to take on Kansas State, 7 o'clock, and the pregame show tomorrow on Z96.3 Lake will be at 6:30, as KU really needs to win that game tomorrow night. Here's why. Well, first of all, K-State's lost 12 in a row, but secondly, is KU needs to win that game, because you look at the last three games of their schedule, holy shnikes. Top 15 games, the next three, to end out the Big 12 schedule. Kansas has Texas Tech at home, who they beat in the final seconds on inbounds play at Lubbock early in the year. Then they go to Texas on February 23rd on Tuesday, a team that beat them by 25 at home in Allen. And then they will host Baylor. I guess two of the three are at home. That's good, but you won't have that home court advantage because you don't have 16,300 rabid KU fans screaming. And that'll be Baylor at home to close out the regular season on February 27th. Bill Self, since he's been head coach at the University of Kansas, has never had worse than a four seed in the NCAA tournament. If they can finish strong, they would probably get a four seed. Who knows, maybe all the way up to a three if they finish really strong. Mm-hmm. If they finish second in the Big 12, I think the Big 12 right behind the Big 10 are the best conferences in America. So you could certainly argue that KU might be deserving of a three. I mean, all their losses, they're a top 20 net teams. They haven't had a bad loss yet. And the Big 12 is tougher from top to bottom, with the exception of Iowa State and K-State. It is deeper, and they have more teams in the top 15 than they've had this late in the season for a while. And KU is not quite as good. We know that. So Kansas, really the goal now is to finish second in the Big 12, because they're not going to catch Baylor, obviously,
yeah,
and win the Big 12. And that's what Bill Self has told his team. Let's work on seeding. You know, if you can get a four, that helps you, obviously, compared to having a six or a seven or something like that. It is pretty amazing, Bill Self, in all these years at KU, has never had worse than a four seed. That is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Because that should automatically put you in Sweet 16 every year. It doesn't. But it should, because you're one of the top 16 teams in America. That means that Bill Self, every year he's been a head coach since he took over in 2003-04 season. So that's, what, 18 seasons? He's always been a top 16 team. That's what it says.
Yeah. It's
Who wouldn't kill for that consistency?
Well, yeah.
I mean, Duke hasn't had it. Carolina hasn't had it. Kentucky hasn't had it. UCLA hasn't had it. There is not another team in America that has had the consistency of Bill Self and Kansas has had in his 18 years as a head coach. No one's comes close. No one comes close. Nobody comes close.
No.
Like Roy Williams, he had an 8 seed. I remember when they played, I think it was, they played Duke. Duke was a 1 and KU was an 8, and KU nearly beat him. Kirk Heinrich got in some foul trouble. I remember that. Some questionable calls against Heinrich, and that changed the game, and KU still almost won. You know, KU wasn't your typical 8 that year, but they were an 8.
Mm.
And Self hasn't even had to worry about thinking about an 8. Usually, all he has to worry about is a 1 or a 2.
Yeah.
So this year's weird, and he might still get a 3 or a 4.
Yeah. You fall all the way down to 4.
Yeah. What a slouch. But, yeah, tough schedule the rest of the way for the Jayhawks. There is a Big 12 game today at 3 o'clock, kind of weird, mm-hmm, on Tuesday. Iowa State at Oklahoma State. And then tomorrow we mentioned KU's at K-State at 7 o'clock, 6:30 pregame on Z96.3 Lake. Texas, number 12 Texas, number 9 Oklahoma at 5 o'clock tomorrow night. That's a big game there. Texas lost Oklahoma by 1 early in the year when they were shorthanded and without their head coach due to COVID-19. Oklahoma with a big win at West Virginia, winning in double overtime 91-90 this past weekend. And you look ahead to Saturday, Texas Tech at KU, and K-State will be at TCU. Maybe that's a game K-State can get coming up on Saturday. And by the way, speaking of K-State, Dusty, it was pretty interesting. You put it on Twitter. You're a big K-State fan. You put it on Twitter, and it's pretty sad because you had to wait till February the 13th to post it. But what did you post on Twitter about your K-State basketball team?
A K-State basketball team finally finished a game with more points than their opponent for the first time in 2021.
Which K-State team would that be?
That'd be the K-State women's team.
And who did they beat?
They beat Kansas.
That's about the only way. Yeah, there you go. K K-State women had a rough year. They had COVID. They've had injuries. It's just been really tough. They were picked to be fourth in the Big 12, which was the highest ranking for Jeff Mitty since been head coach of the K-State women's program. But it's just been a rough, rough year. COVID obviously messed it up initially, and now some injuries. And K-State finally got off the schneid and won a game in the Big 12 the other day against Kansas. So K-State, it only took them about 6 weeks to finally get a win on either women's or men's basketball in 2021. Okay.
Only go up from here, right?
Only where to go. Nowhere to go but down, or nowhere to go but up, right? Yeah. Really sad story in the sports world. Remember Vincent Jackson?
Mm-hmm.
He was a good player, and he's from Northern Colorado. And Vincent Jackson, wide receiver for the Buccaneers and the Chargers. He was drafted by the Chargers in the second round. He was found dead at a hotel room at the age of 38. What is really weird about this story, and not that we should care so much, because we should obviously, you know, be thinking about him and his family passing away at the age of 38, was that he checked into this hotel on January the 11th. So he stayed at this hotel for over a month. And so when I first saw that, I was like, oh, he's probably, you know, maybe he's never married. Maybe, you know, he's divorced. I you know, whatever. And I read further on, it says he was the wife and the kids. And I mean, he was married, had kids. So I don't know if they were estranged. I don't know if he was, I don't know. It's really weird. And people are going to speculate, did he have mental health issues? You know, was there something from the hits he took in football? We have no idea. It's probably not fair to speculate at all. But they're looking into it. There was a missing persons report filed a few days ago. They checked on him, and he was there. And he was, or I don't know if he was there, but they found him anyway, bottom line. And then a few days later, he was found dead in the hotel. He was a second-round draft pick in 2005. And I'm pulling it here. I'm trying to find this here. There were no apparent signs of trauma, so forth and so on. And this is a statement that the sheriff said. Mr. Jackson was a devoted man who put his family and community above everything else. Football aside, he touched countless lives through his Jackson in Action 83 Foundation. We shared a passion for supporting military families. 3 years ago, Jackson was even made an honorary deputy by the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office to recognize his dedication to the community, so forth and so on. But it is odd, isn't it, that he was at a hotel since January the 11th? Obviously, got to be more to this, I would think.
Yeah.
It says he's a devoted man who put his family and community above everything else. Well, why wasn't he with his family?
Yeah, that's the only thing you could think of in a situation like that is maybe they were separated for a little bit, him and his wife.
Right.
To be staying there that long at a hotel. But other than that.
That seemed like the weird part of the story to me. Yeah, so anyway, he was a really good receiver. He was a tough cover. I know the Chiefs had problems covering him when he was with the Chargers, and unfortunately he passes away at the age of 38, and there might be more information, obviously, that comes out of this, but yeah, he'd been staying at a hotel about 12 miles outside of Tampa since January the 11th. The officers said they spoke with Jackson's family members on February 10th after they had called a report that he was missing. A formal report was filed the following day. Last Friday, officials said they located Jackson at the Homewood Suites and spoke with him. After assessing Jackson's well-being, the missing persons case was canceled. And then a few days later on Monday, yesterday morning at 11:30, he was found dead by a housekeeper in that hotel room.
Man.
It's a weird story.
Yeah.
He just... there's no signs of foul play or anything. They'll determine the cause of death and so forth and so on. But something's just, there's missing piece to this puzzle.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
Because when I first saw it, I was like, oh, February 11th. And he checked, no, January 11th. Like February 11th. Okay, he was maybe in business and he was at a hotel, da-da-da-da-da. But still a great player and from a small school and did so well in the National Football League with the Chargers and the Buccaneers. Good news to pass along to you, even though it started out as a really bad story. But the 5-year-old girl that was injured critically by Brett Reed, the son of Andy Reed, a few days before the Super Bowl, she has awoken from her coma. So that is great news for the 5-year-old girl named Ariel, as she has awoken. And we will continue to follow that investigation. Britt Reed, by the way, is no longer a member of the Kansas City Chiefs because his contract expired the day after the Super Bowl. So that was convenient for the Chiefs. They didn't have to fire him. They just let it expire.
Put him on administrative leave for a day, and his contract expired.
That worked out. That worked out pretty well for the Chiefs from that standpoint. So they technically can say they didn't fire him.
Yeah.
There was this article by Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports. And it's an interesting article. He makes some interesting points. I think I know the answers to some of his questions. But I'll get your input on this. Clark Hunt is a billionaire with a B, all right? The Chiefs organization is worth millions, millions, millions of dollars. Andy Reid has plenty of money from all his years as a head coach. And there was a GoFundMe page that was set up for the family because this the mom of the 5-year-old girl who just awoke from the coma, and of course there's a 4-year-old girl of hers that was hurt too, by the way, but not as badly. The mom is, I think she's 30 years of age. She's a single mom, and that horrible thing happened to her while she went to help, I think, a relation that was on the side of the exit ramp. And then Britt Reed, allegedly, well, he did. He ran into him. That's not alleged. That's a fact. And he also had 2 or 3 drinks he admitted to, so whether or not he was drunk or not, we don't know. Ran into him. Wrong place, wrong time for that family. And so there's a GoFundMe page set up. There are football players from other NFL teams that have donated. There are people in Kansas City who raised a lot of money. I think the last I saw was like over $400,000 for the hospital bills and everything else. And the questions that were posed by Dan Wetzel, Yahoo Sports, was all the Chiefs do is come out with a statement saying our thoughts and prayers are with the girl and the family. Why don't you just go ahead and say we'll take care of the medical bills? Even if you're worried about a lawsuit, Clark Hunt can handle a lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
He's got plenty of money to deal with a lawsuit. I mean, even if he had to pay, $20 million in a settlement, he's got it without doubt. So the point that Dan Wetzel was saying is why haven't the Chiefs and the organization and Clark Hunt stepped up to the plate, or even Andy Reid for that matter, and done something to help this girl instead of the hollow words of, well, she's in our prayers. I think it's simple. The answer to the question, I think it's where we live in society today. I think back in the day, I think something like this would have happened where the Chiefs would have stepped up. But it's called CYA. And you know what CYA means? Cover your you know what. It's called lawyers. It's called legalities. It's called don't admit to anything per se, although Britt Reed did admit to drinking. The other question, and this is the liability part, and I don't think there's any doubt there'll be a lawsuit filed by the family. The question is, who's going to help pay the legal fees? Which, if you're going to win the case, then that'll be taken care of by the Chiefs, obviously. But the questions do arise from this whole thing. First of all, the Chiefs probably aren't doing much because they're the legal part, right? They're probably getting legal advice saying, hey, don't say much. Obviously, don't offer to cover the medical bills, which, we've got to the point where we get too many lawyers involved and we don't do what's humanly decent anymore. And we don't even get our politicians to do things that are humanly decent anymore, unfortunately. So, Britt Reed, there's strict COVID restrictions. I mean, the Chiefs aren't going to risk going to the bar. They're not going to risk going to a restaurant and drinking a whole bunch, especially a few days before the Super Bowl. So, odds are, but we don't know this for sure, is Britt Reed was drinking at work at Arrowhead. The accident happened not far from Arrowhead. It's on his way back to where he lives in Overland Park.
Mm-hmm.
If he did this while he was working and the Chiefs knew that he had drank at work before, and there's cameras, trust me, NFL has cameras all over the place for all these organizations, there's some major liability for the Kansas City Chiefs organization, not just Britt Reed.
Yeah, it's, and I guarantee you that's why the Chiefs haven't stepped forward and said or done anything of that nature, saying, hey, we're going to cover hospital bills and stuff, because they don't know that they're liable.
We'll donate something to GoFundMe.
And we don't know that Britt was at work. We don't know all the details. We think it's probably fairly possible that that's the case, but if he's not, then the Chiefs don't have
the liability. First of all, there's a problem. Well, I guess you technically could have been drinking. There's so many problems with this. First of all, if he wasn't at work drinking, then he was sitting in his car drinking. Well, there's a problem.
Well, yeah, obviously.
If he went to a bar and had drinks, there's a problem. That violates COVID protocol for the National Football
League. Yeah.
So he puts his team at risk. So any scenario you come up with is a bad one for Britt Reid.
Oh, for Britt Reid, no doubt. I mean, this whole...
No matter where he drank.
No matter where he was
at. The Chiefs liability-wise, if it was happening in the office,
yeah,
that's where the liability comes on the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And if they knew about it.
If they knew about it, that's where the liability comes in. I don't think you can,
if they didn't know about
they can't police everything you're doing every single day. Like, if I had a drink out here in the office,
right?
You're not liable for that. I'm liable for that. I made a mistake. I didn't tell you about it. You didn't know about it. And so
if you get in a company car and you go do something, now your company is liable.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, and this was his, I think it was his personal vehicle, not the chief's.
Yeah, and so there's so many things that are involved
that
we don't know about yet.
Right.
That, you know, it's all speculation on any end of that, but... Listen, it's pretty easy to know why the Chiefs haven't come out and done anything like Dan Wetzel's suggesting, right? And then also, if it doesn't fall on their, if they're not liable for it, why do they need to pay for a mistake that Britt Reid made?
True.
And
Dan Wetzel mentioned Andy Reid.
He was employed by the Chiefs.
Right.
Clark Hunt, the family has money. I get it.
Sure.
But they shouldn't be liable for a mistake that a guy that was employed by them made. It didn't have anything to do with them, right? Now, if it did and they're liable, then, yeah, they're going to have to... Eventually, they're going to have to pay the piper, right?
Mm-hmm.
In some way, most likely. And so... But, yeah, I mean, Andy Reid could do that, but, you know... I mean, Britt Reid's a grown man, too.
Yeah.
So...
I mean, Andy didn't
say
make
Andy
the,
could
Andy
pay
didn't
it, too, but Andy didn't make that mistake or decision to do that. And so it's easy to say these guys have all this money. They should pay for everything, mm-hmm. right? Well, it's not them that made the mistake. It's not their money that they need to be paying for, right?
But that ties in with Dan Wetzel's thought, though. See, what he's saying is Andy Reid wasn't at fault. Why didn't Andy Reid offer to help the family? I mean, yeah, it's his son.
And how do we know they haven't?
Well, I mean... We don't.
How do we know they haven't given something
well,
to the
cops? Actually, they had it on the story. At the time of the story was written, they had contacted the family. The family had not been contacted by anybody by the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
So that was part of the story.
Yeah.
So according to that information, they hadn't been contacted by the Chiefs, which why, once again, the Chiefs aren't going to
risk.
They're
not going to contact them. We don't know that
nobody from the Chiefs.
They didn't give anything
Well, maybe.
Either,
we don't know that. That's true.
I'm just putting these things out there because there's a lot of stuff about this we have no idea.
Oh, I know. I think what we do know is Britt Reid messed up.
Yeah, we know
that. I think
that's
pretty clear.
That's pretty clear. And like I say, it's easy for people to say the people with all the money should take care of it, right?
Sure, right.
Well, it's not as easy as you always want to make it think sometimes.
Right.
Know?
True.
I'm not saying I disagree with what he's saying.
Sometimes we make things way more complicated than it needs to be because
Absolutely.
We get all the lawyers involved.
Absolutely,
All you got to do is see what's been happening lately with the whole impeachment trial.
Yeah.
And all the money that we're spending on, whether it's protecting someone or trying to prove somebody's guilt. And we just get so much of this involved in sometimes frivolous lawsuits all over the place. And that's why I think this is why we have things that are different than when you and I were growing up. We I joke with my kids about how they don't go to school 5 days a week anymore. You know, it gets cold. I said, are you kidding me? We went to school when it was 0 degrees. Windshield was negative 10. I was scooping out bunks on the farm for crying out loud. I mean, you know, nowadays nobody does any, I mean, farmers still do that stuff,
the
way. But the schools, you know why they don't have school like they used to back in the day? I mean, we get a little bit of snow, it's immediately call off school or start late. Whereas when we were like, dude, it took a foot of snow to stop us from having school, or maybe 6 inches. But we still went to school when it snowed a few inches. It was the bus still went on the county roads. We went to school. But you know why they don't do what they used to do? It's called lawyers.
There's an accident. They're liable
it's
for
called,
your life.
It's called lawsuit happyville.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's called somebody wanted to make a buck off an innocent accident. Well, you should have never been on the roads. And it's evolved to the point where entities, businesses, schools, whatever it may be, it ends up being CYA, cover your you-know-what. And that's the same thing here. The Chiefs are going to cover their butt on this thing. They're not going to do the right, the human decency thing and say, hey, you know what, let's go. And maybe they did anonymously. You may be right. That's a good point. But we make things so complicated. And whatever happened, just doing what was right. And nowadays, we get so confused. Some people are so brainwashed to not even understand what right and wrong is anymore. Because they've been flipped around left and right like whiplash with their head going left and right because this person tells you this and this person tells you this. And that's where we get into this politically correct society as well. Where whatever we say, we could be, I can't say that. Why can't you say that? It's obvious. Just say it. It's your opinion. Well, you know, I could get in trouble for saying it. And if you're scared to say anything, then it's like, man, what's the point of having a voice?
Mm-hmm.
So it all bleeds together. It really does. Sure. And in this situation, it's no different. You have an accident. You have an employee that was involved. You're going to look into whether or not anybody in your organization, I mean, Clark Hunt might not know, but some other employee might have known Brent Reed was drinking in the office. That makes the Chiefs liable. If there was another employee that knew about it, somebody within the Chiefs organization knew about it, and that's called enabling if you allowed it to happen, and then didn't report to Clark Hunt, it's still going to fall in that organization. So that's part of the reason why, as Dan Wetzel says, do the right thing. You have the money. Even if you get sued, you have plenty of money left over. Well, that's easy to say if you're not a billionaire. I mean, I'm not. Dan Wetzel probably isn't. I get his point, though.
Yeah.
Do what's right. But that doesn't happen much anymore.
No, and I understand it's a talking point for him to write something
sure.
about, you know. And
right.
But, you know, it's like some of the people that get on that don't, you know, research and
right.
actually think about their thought process before putting an article out like that. They
sure.
just put a comment on Facebook, and it's
right.
like, you know, it's easy for you to say they should do that.
Right. But,
and now, listen, I'm not saying that if the Chiefs step up and say, hey, we're going to cover the remainder of the hospital bills,
right.
You know, whatever, after the, whatever GoFundMe takes care of, we'll cover the rest after that, because I'm sure that's going to be more than just this. This is the immediate, the GoFundMe thing is the immediate thing, right?
Right.
Because it's not cheap to be staying in a hospital, believe me, I know, for that long of a period. And this, whatever, I think they wanted $400,000. This is going to cover the first part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's not where I was either. I
right.
mean, it's not cheap to be where she's at. And so, and but then after that, if Andy Reid and the Chiefs come out and say jointly, we're going to cover the rest of this,
right?
Then that's fine. They have the prerogative to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, it's easy to just say, oh, the rich people should just pay for it.
Right. Right. No, it is. It is easy to say that.
Without knowing all the details of it, right?
True. True.
We know enough of the details about Britt Reid, right?
I think the point of the story, too, what Dan Wetzel's trying to say, and I think other people would agree with him, is that regular people that aren't nearly as well off as Clark Hunt and the Chiefs organization and Britt Reid and Andy Reid are donating money to help this girl and a family because of somebody that screwed up, and it wasn't them, so mm-hmm. they're being nice people and donating, and the people that really should be helping aren't doing anything, and people that have a lot less than Clark Hunt. And I'm not saying Clark Hunt, it's his fault. We don't know, you know, I don't think it's Clark Hunt's fault at all, although there might be somebody within his organization that knew about it, and Clark Hunt didn't know about it, in regards to drinking office, if that's true, or whatever the case may be. But there's no doubt people have a lot less money than Andy Reid and Britt Reid and Clark Hunt are chipping in to help this kid, mm-hmm. this kid and family, single mother of, I think, three. I mean, that's the human decency thing to do. And I think the point is that all these people have done that, and the Chiefs have just come out and said the old song and dance, thoughts and prayers. So that rubs people the wrong way. And
yeah.
I can see why it rubs people the wrong way.
Listen, I get it.
And I do too, but I get both sides.
All,
I get both sides.
You also need to understand
right.
where the Chiefs are coming from in this
right.
situation.
Well, and I understand.
At this point in time, and there's a lot of people that don't.
Yeah. Right.
Now, Dan Wetzel does.
He
I'm,
does.
I'm guessing.
Right.
But
he does.
But the people, you know, the people that comment just on the fly that I've
oh,
seen,
sure.
it's
right.
just like,
right.
Yeah, understand where that's coming from. But
yeah, right. But then there's also people that are simply saying, do what's right.
Yeah.
Is it that hard? You're in a financial situation where we know you're a billionaire owner or organization or Andy Reid. We know Andy Reid isn't living, you know, in a shack.
Yeah.
Or on the streets. So basically Dan Wetzel's just basically saying, do the right thing and help them out. And I would think that if the Chiefs did, let's say they gave $500,000 and then they still got sued, I would think you could work it out and say, okay, they already paid for $500,000, so we'd subtract that off the amount because they already paid $500,000 to help. But once again, the Chiefs aren't going to do that until they know
Chiefs
for sure they're not liable.
Exactly. I mean, they could, because the people on the other side could say, no, that was a gift. That's not part of
right.
of what you owe us.
Right.
And so it's so easy to do that, and now you're in a hole on the other side. You know, like
right.
you thought you did the right thing, and then they didn't agree with it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, like I said, it's way more complicated than it should be. All right? Kind of like calling off school. Way more complicated than it used to be. Just, it's different, man. It's different. And I know, oh, yeah, well, I walked to school backwards in 6-foot snowdrifts. And, you know, how the stories get exaggerated. But it is a running joke in my house. I mean, for instance, my kids didn't have to go to school on Thursday or Friday, parent-teacher conferences. Yes, they didn't have to go to school because it's President's Day. They go to school on Martin Luther King Day, but they don't go to school on President's Day, which I do find interesting. I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just, it's a fact.
Yeah.
My son has asked the same thing. He's like, why are some schools out on Martin Luther King Day and we aren't? And then President's Day, to me, okay, I don't know. President's Day, you get President's Day off. Okay, fine. That's a Monday. Maybe it just ties into the weekend. But you just had parent-teacher conferences. You get Monday off President's Day, and then today they get off because of how cold it is, which I'm not saying it's wrong to not have school because it's, you know, -7 right now and the wind chill is -30. Don't get me wrong. But the reason that they don't want to have school in those situations is why? You know, a bus goes out and gets stranded and gets stuck in a snowdrift, and then these kids, and then they get hypothermia, and then something bad happens, and then they get sued.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the reason why you err on the side of caution, and you didn't have to worry about that 30 years ago. If you did, you didn't have to worry about nearly as much. So once again, I get it, and it's a running joke in my house that I go to work many more days than my kids go to school, and I want to switch with them so that I can just stay home, you know, play video games, and especially today, it's cold, I can lounge around, watch TV, maybe I do something, maybe I'm able to go to a gym or something, whatever. I'm kidding with my kids. I'm like, they always whine about going to school. I'm like, what do you mean? You've only been to school 3 days in the last 10 days. I said, I'd love to switch with you. It's like, when's the last time you had 5 days school week? Well, they have, but it's just a running joke. Yeah. I'm like, hey, yeah, man, you can go to work and get up early, and I'll go ahead and sleep in. That'll be cool.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Australian Open. Dusty is our tennis analyst or guru. So, Dusty, you tell us what's happening in the Australian Open. All I know is Djokovic tore a muscle. I know that team, whatever his name is, he lost
he's
a three seed. I know Osaka battled off two match points the other day. Now she's in the semis. And is Serena playing today against Halep? Because if Serena wins,
if Serena wins,
Serena will take on Osaka. And that'll be the first time since Serena had her meltdown at the U.S. Open finals back in 18 in New York against Osaka when Serena acted like a little child.
Yeah.
And then took away the whole moment from the Naomi Osaka, which is still, Naomi Osaka is much more forgiving, or she isn't, and she says she is, and she plays it real well out in public. But after what Serena pulled and did and took away from everything that year, to where she was even crying at the awards ceremony, Serena really owes Naomi Osaka a lot, in my opinion. But maybe she's done a lot
with Naomi Osaka is she looked up to Serena, right?
Right.
So she holds her in a different regard.
Yes.
And even when she treats her badly, when she treats her badly, like, she still has no real beef or issues with Serena today. Like, just the way it is. Serena beat Simona Halep, actually, early this morning.
So Serena taking on Osaka.
6-3, so, yeah.
In the semis at the Australian Open.
Yeah.
And then
Djokovic won sets early this morning as well.
So Djokovic still alive?
Yes.
Is Nadal playing in the Australian Open?
He's on. His semifinal will be either, I think, early tomorrow morning.
And Federer didn't play in Australia this year?
I don't believe
so. He was out with an injury, if I remember right.
So Rublev and Medvedev are the other quarterfinals right now, and then Nadal will be playing early morning against Tsitsipas.
Okay, gotcha.
So, yeah.
Gus Malzahn is a new head coach of Central Florida after he got fired at Auburn with a winning record this year. Of course, Josh Heupel went from Central Florida to Tennessee. Let's see, I forgot, what's his first name? Is it Matt House? He's on the coach staff for the Chiefs.
I believe it is, yeah.
He was offered a defensive coordinator position at the University of Tennessee. Instead, he turned it down to stay with Andy Reid and the Chiefs, which is interesting. Let's see, what else? 5-star Duke freshman Jalen Johnson opted out for the rest of the season. Interesting timing, you opt out now. You basically, you know, I agree. I see people saying, well, he didn't quit. He did quit. He quit on his team. I'm not saying what he did was completely wrong, because he's got to look out what's best for him. And let's be honest, universities don't always look out for what's best for the student athlete. And Duke is having a rough year, and they might not make the tournament. And he's kind of like, dude, I'm out because I don't want to get hurt. I'm going to go in the lottery. I'm probably going to be a lottery pick. So I understand why he's doing it. The timing looks bad because it does look selfish. It looks like he's quit on his team because they're not that good. And I do believe that if Duke was going to go to the tournament for sure, was a top seed, he wouldn't have opted out.
No.
Which means he's quit on a team that's not that good. And it's unfortunate, but I do see both sides of that, don't you?
I do.
I mean, the athlete has the right to opt out.
Yeah.
He's not opting out because of COVID. Well, if he said that, he's lying.
Yeah.
He's doing it to opt out to get ready for the NBA draft.
Somebody sent it in our group Twitter yesterday, and I was like, oh, I thought Duke opted out of the season a long time ago. So.
Well, the Duke women did.
And Coach K, you know, after that bad start, basically said we probably should. You know, that's basically why are we even playing basketball right now, was one of the things he said after they started like 2-2 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then now they're not even, you know, they're just average at best. And so, yeah, it's, yeah, he's got the right to opt out. And like, but I agree with you. I feel like if they're number one in the country or even number 10 in the country right now with 2-3 losses,
mm-hmm.
you know, competing and contending, that he's probably not going to opt out.
He has had a foot injury he's been dealing with, and Krzyzewski said on Monday in a statement he hinted at Johnson's opting out as a decision made based at least in part on his medical future with respect to the foot injury. Like, if he keeps playing on it now, he could make things worse, and that could hurt his career and his earnings power, obviously. And listen, if that's the case, then I think Jalen Johnson made the right decision. I know people see
to see if he sits out of these workouts he needs to do for the NBA.
Yeah, that's true.
We'll know if that's true or not.
Right. But I've said this before, and I know people are all about team and so forth and so on, say this is quitting. And I understand the thinking. Don't get me wrong. If I was on the Duke team, I'd look at him and probably say he quit on us. At the same time, he's got to do what's best for him. And if this is what's best for him, because the whole idea of going to college, correct me if I'm wrong, is to get a job and make money, right?
Yes.
So if you have a chance to make a lot of money, why would you risk playing on an 8-8 team that's 6-6 in the ACC when you've already dealt with a foot injury? Why would you want to maybe make that worse and put your career in jeopardy? I mean, it does make
you
sense.
I mean,
most of the people that say he's quitting would make the same decision he's making.
Uh-huh, for sure.
So it's hypocritical.
Yeah. With a lot of these situations, I don't really blame college athletes for most of what they do, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's some times where it's like, well, yeah, you probably should have known that was coming, you know, maybe leave earlier or whatever.
But, right.
I mean, and the NCAA has rules in place this year that are way different than they've been in the past, too.
That's true.
A lot easier to just say, no, I'm done.
That's true.
So you got to understand that there's a lot of things that are different right now than they were.
Yes.
Even a year ago.
That is very well said. NBA last night, the Bulls beat the Pacers 121-112. The Wizards beat the Rockets 131-119. The Knicks have played pretty well. Julius Randle's having an all-star type of season. They beat the Hawks 123-112. The Jazz beat the Sixers 134-123. In that game, Jordan Clarkson, coming off the bench, had 40 points. He's the front runner for sixth man of the year. Joel Embiid, who seems to be out every other game because of something, it seems like he's made out of glass sometimes, I feel. Utah's 23-5. They've won 19 in the last 20 games. And Ben Simmons had a career-high 42, but it wasn't enough, as Clarkson hit a career-high 8 three-pointers as the Jazz keep rolling, and they might be the best team in the West. I mean, right now they are. With Anthony Davis out with the Achilles that he re-aggravated, out for 2 to 3 weeks, the Jazz are the best team in the West. The question is, will the Lakers be fully healthy and Davis ready to go when the postseason comes around? If so, then the Lakers are the best team. Right now, it might be the Jazz. Giannis said that the Jazz are the best team in the West. So who's to argue with the two-time reigning MVP? Well, anybody can argue with anybody. But the Jazz, 23-5, and the Sixers, one of the best teams in the East. That was an interesting game last night in the NBA. The Clippers beat the Miami Heat, who continued to struggle, 125-118. Steph Curry he's done something. The last person to do it was Michael Jordan. Do you know what it is? Curry is the first person since Jordan to do this.
I don't.
He's the first guy to score. Okay, now I'm trying to remember it exactly. He's the first guy since Jordan to go 9 straight games scoring 35 or more, I think it was, and shooting over 50% in every one of those 9 games. And think about that. It's even more impressive to me because of Curry, because he shoots so deep.
Mm-hmm.
129-98, they beat the Cavs last night. Curry's just so fun to watch. And the Brooklyn Nets last night won. You want to guess how many points they allowed?
125.
That's correct.
Is that really 125?
Yes.
I just went.
You didn't know?
No, I just went with another 25 after the, like another quarter of a.
Brooklyn beat Sacramento 136-125. Kyrie Irving says James Harden is our point guard. Irving's the two guard. Well, as long as they get along.
Yeah.
Irving scored 40 last night, and that set a team record for threes. And they win, but they still gave up 125 to the Kings. And there was one more thing I was going to. Oh, and the Phoenix Suns, by the way. You know, Chris Paul, wherever he goes, teams win. And the Suns are one of the hottest teams in NBA. They've won six in a row, and they're moving up in the standings. The Phoenix Suns, they're my adopted team this year, since my Thunder are no good. They're my adopted team, and I like Booker. I've really liked Booker ever since he got in the league. Ayton's a good, solid player, and now you add Chris Paul to the mix, and the Suns are doing very well. And they're going to play the Nets coming up tonight, believe it or not. And Ja Morant versus Zion, Pelicans and Grizzlies tonight on TNT. So two pretty good doubleheaders. Chris Paul, Devin Booker versus Kyrie Irving and James Harden. Kevin Durant with a hamstring injury now. Durant's season's been all up and down because of COVID protocols and being taken out of during a game because of COVID protocols, now a hamstring injury. That's a pretty good doubleheader for the NBA for star power, though.
That's probably why
they selected
Ja Morant Zion thing is that, star power
that's the future
only because
right
those
there.
Are not good teams. Right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. The Grizzlies are actually doing better than.
But yeah,
Grizzlies
I mean,
doing
Ja Morant than, when he came back and got healthy, that's why.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well yeah.
So, yeah
right.
For sure, the two teams are definitely dominated by those two young players that are.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you know, if the NBA if it goes the right way for them, or hopefully the future for them.
Grizzlies are 11-11. They're in the 9 spot in the West. They're only a game behind the Warriors, so they're not too bad. The Pelicans, meanwhile, they are
11-15.
They're 11-15. Yeah, at the 12th spot there. So, worst team in the NBA right now is not the Wizards anymore. It's the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Detroit Pistons. And Blake Griffin, former OU Sooner, not going to play until they figure out what they're going to do with his huge contract. He's a declining player. He's fallen off quite a bit the last couple of years. He's owed like $35 million or $37 this year and $39 next year. Good luck finding a trade partner for that. So he'll probably sign some mid-level exception, go to another team, and they'll work out the deals of his contract or a buyout. But he's not playing. And he's been a good teammate despite all this going on. And the Pistons said, we're just going to sit you, and we're not going to trade, or we'll work out something. And the Cavaliers doing the same thing with Andre Drummond, who's an outstanding center, but the Cavs aren't very good. He's only 28. And so they're saying they're not going to play him until they figure out what they're going to do, which I guess makes sense because you don't want the guy to get hurt, and then he's not worth anything for you if you try to trade him. And the player kind of the same way, but that's once again the difference between generations, isn't it? That type of stuff never happened back in the day in the
if
NBA.
You're disgruntled, you still played.
You still played.
Team might have suffered for it. But.
Right. Yeah. Right. Or you just, wind your way out of a place like, I don't know, James Harden. Have a great day, everyone. Hey, 5 degrees below zero. We're going to get there, folks. We're going to get to zero. I can feel it. No, actually, I can't. I'm numb and I'm cold and I'm, ugh.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.